This is the CC Radio Podcast.
Welcome to episode 294 of the Countdown Podcast. Thanks for dialing us up. Kapow! My name is Wayne. You see, the episode is about phoning it in, and I said dialing it up. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, boy.
Isn't it great when you have to explain your humor to your co-host? My name is Paul. Welcome to the podcast. We count down movies and sometimes television in order of awesomeness, so you don't have to. And today, as Wayne has already explained,
ship is clean, y'all.
We're talking about performances that were pretty average, slash terrible, slash phoned.
Phoned in, mate. Phoned in.
Had some fun with this one.
I know we say this all the time, but I found it quite difficult.
My top three, bam, bam, done. Yeah. Oh, yeah. No worries.
It's all the lower
the back end.
Absolutely.
Was a bit harder to organize.
It becomes like a call of your own, Steve, because you're like, exactly. Maybe I felt that the guy was not here, but
that's
whatever.
Okay. Yeah. So this one doesn't need to be justified, but it's not like there's a criteria to meet.
Exactly. You throw it down.
You could arguably suggest that, I don't want to give anything away from my list, but let's just go with, say, a wonderful performance. So Academy Award-winning performance could be phoned in as far as you're concerned,
exactly,
as long as you can justify.
Exactly.
Right, so not that there are any of those on my list, just to be clear.
No, me neither. Neither. And you know what's funny? Usually a phoned in performance means the movie's shit, right? Not always. Sometimes it's phoned in, but it still worked.
I think
as a movie.
All of my films are shit, but most of them most
definitely
are.
Most of them are definitely shit.
Yeah, for 100% certainty. All right, well, look, that's pretty much the brief, straightforward, and there it is for you. But let's get into it on the other side of this segment that kicks off most of our shows, The Recount.
Who wants a recap? Who wants a recap? Who wants a recap? Who wants a recap?
Who said what this week, Paul?
Well, let's kick it off with the result. Let's just get the pain out of the way.
Okay, I guess first. That
means actually, to be honest, some weeks I really resent losing. This week wasn't one of them. Because you had an absolute pearler of a number one, Wayne. You really did pull the rug out from under us. And despite the fact that you didn't even know that Seven wasn't David Fincher's first film, I think you deserve the win. So well done, sir.
Very kind.
The poll for episode 293, the only place you can poll is in the Facebook community link, is in the show notes if you're new to the show. Who won last week's show, the best list of directorial debuts, where we had Jason from the Binge Movies podcast joining us. Jason did a wonderful job, really brought the class whilst we maintain the arse.
Oh, yes.
I think that's the way to go about it.
Most def.
It was an absolute shellacking, and I don't think the whole 10-vote rule counts when we have a guest on.
Well, in that case, I never got the 9 votes. Oh, no.
No, you did. It was just you and me that week. Nice try.
Shit.
Jason had 6 votes. And I think the film connoisseurs went with him. I had 18 votes. And you, powering through all, had 42 votes.
Oh, wow.
Smashed it out of the park. Here are some of the comments regarding that. Jon Snow, a.k.a. Julio from The Contrarian, said, Paul, because Brick sucks ass. Choice on Wayne's list. Jonathan Kidd said, the 7 snafu was hilarious, but I also just like Wayne's list. P.S. Donnie Darko is shit.
Oh.
So, Jonathan, I'm not quite sure where your rationale is there. Wayne had 2 terrible choices and you still voted for him. All right. But Smiley Smarty said, crikey, Wayne-O smashed it for 6. His number one was inspired. His whole list was pretty excellent. You could hear the actual surprise in Paulie's voice at a few of his choices. So, absolutely earned a vote there.
Very kind.
Adam Malua, another patron to the show, said, Paul gets it for the masterpiece of John Wick. Yeah! Luke James Human said, despite Jason inspiring me to watch Fruitvale Station, which was indeed great. Yes, it was. It's impossible to argue with Paul's list. Oh, thank you, sir. Even with the inclusion of Neil Blomkamp's 2nd best movie.
Which was?
District 9. District according 9. To his favorite is Elysium.
What?
No, wait. Chappie.
What? To be fair, I've not seen Chappie.
Welcome to the soundboard.
But I just heard Paul talk about it.
Oh, you haven't seen it? Oh, no. You would have that same reaction.
But most people think that, right?
It's terrible.
Yeah.
It's absolutely terrible. Daniel Lowe said, it's a shame nerdiness isn't appreciated here. Sorry, Jason. That being said, I love Spider-Man, so fuck everything else. That's a vote for you. Now, David Powell, patron extraordinaire to the show, good friend, said, Kane, Badlands, Donnie Darko, Breathless, and the almighty Night of the Hunter. Jason couldn't have won more decisively if he tried. So I think Jason won the nerd film connoisseur vote
on pretty
and you,
much,
and you won the everything else
popular
vote.
No, on every time we have a guest, it's typically someone who's better at podcasting than me. Right? Just like I look at it, I'm like, I assume that guy's gonna be smarter, and it always is that guy's smarter, right? Doesn't necessarily get the votes, but it's always doing a good job.
So thank you, Jason, for joining us. It was wonderful to have you on the show finally. But Wayne wins now. He leads 16-14, one draw. It's getting harder and harder to catch Wayne.
Amazing.
Could be his first win of the year.
Or ever.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, of the year overall. All right, then over to a review, which we got about a month or so ago from Wardy789 in the UK. Wardy, I want to thank you so much for this. The best 5 stars. Literally my favorite podcast. Every week I cannot wait for the next episode to drop. And the second it appears in my feed, it is always next on my list. The banter between Paul and Wayne is great, and they never fail to put a smile on my face. Simply the best. That's for you, Wardy.
Yeah, just thanks for cheapening it, Paul.
Thank you so much. Now, look, a couple of appeals here. First of all,
yeah,
we have 99 reviews on Apple iTunes in Australia.
Mm.
Who wants to be a number 100? Putting the challenge out there to you, we prefer it to be 5 stars, but if you feel the need to give us a 1-star rating if you're listening to this and have listened to several episodes.
I understand. Well,
more power to you. So we're looking for that 100th episode. If you want to be that person, please do help us out. And we also want to announce a new competition.
Go on. A new competition.
Is this. Now, if you're an existing member of the Facebook listening community, 393 people in that group where we talk topics and people post topics and we have a lot of fun in there. Week in and week out. If you're an existing member, we're looking to get to 400.
Yeah.
And beyond.
Right.
If you refer someone to the group.
As in invite them to the group?
Invite them to the group. They get involved. They post at least once to the group. Yes. At least reply, whatever else it is. Right? You go into the draw for a countdown pack. A t-shirt of your choosing. A mug of your choosing, which will be delivered to you, hopefully in time for Christmas. Can't guarantee Australia Post.
Yeah. I think it's actually, I don't know where it's gone. Yeah, gone.
I'm not going to go straight post, just saying that the whole pandemic thing has fucked everything up for everybody.
Yes, of course,
Chris, just simmer down, mate.
And there's how many of these to give away, Paulie?
Well, I guess, I don't know, how many do we... Two.
Did you say...
Two. We'll do two. We're going to do random draws. Two packs to anyone who gets involved, refers a mate, and that mate says, yep, this was X person who got me in here.
We send it to both of you.
Yep, we'll send it to both of you. So a pack each, and we'll do... Do we do two packs for two?
Yeah.
Yeah, why not? Why the fuck not? It's Christmas, damn it.
That's right.
Almost is, anyway.
Just throw it down. So invite a friend to Facebook listener community today, and hopefully they'll dig it, and hopefully they'll, if they comment and stuff, then once, once.
You got to comment. If you don't, if you just appear in the group, you never comment. It doesn't count. You got to comment on something or post a topic. That's the rules. All right. And we'll hopefully have this... If we can draw it by Christmas, if we hit 400, we'll do it by Christmas. If we don't, we'll wait until the new year.
As soon as we do.
Okay. And finally, I want to have a couple of shout-outs to a couple of great shows, which I featured on this week.
You've been busy?
I have been busy. First of all, Billy. B-Dizzle. We love the B-Dizzle. He's patron of the show. Does a wonderful podcast. We watched the thing with his mate, Topher. Now, Topher's had a baby and therefore has been indisposed. And I got to feature with B-Dizzle on the Empty Man episode. I think I mentioned it last week. It's now out.
Mm-hmm.
Do check out our review of Empty Man, which devolves into an episode review of Tommy Boy.
Oh, wow. Okay, can't miss that one.
We have beef with We Watch the Thing because they don't like Predator. We don't like Tommy Boy. Neither does Topher for that matter. It's just B-Dizzle fighting the entire world about Tommy Boy.
Oh, okay. Yeah, shit. That's hard.
And then, of course, the Flicks Watcher podcast.
Flicks
Watcher. We were on again with Kobe and Helen. This week it was my choice, Children of Men, which Wayne and I reviewed with those wonderful people. Check out the Flicks Watcher podcast there.
They're very fancy.
They are fancy.
They're fancy. They're far English fancier. And very smart sounding. So I was like...
Smart sounding? Smart people.
Clever folks.
Yes. So thank you to them for having us on, and do check out their episode. All right, that's it for the recap this week. Let's get into the countdown proper on the other side of this music cue. Top 10 comedy performances.
on
this
brand.
Week's countdown.
Fantastic.
I think we've explained all the parameters that we need. Wayne, lead us away. What is your number 10 worst / best for Din performance?
Okay. This is a movie that I consider about as shit as it gets.
Okay.
About as shit as it gets. It's actually 2006's Miami Vice.
Oh.
You remember the show?
I do.
So we got your Colin Farrell and you got your Jamie Foxx doing Crockett and Tubbs.
Who gets it?
Colin Farrell, because at least Jamie Foxx cared. Now, okay. I actually, first of all, this movie is so incredibly shit. It doesn't even make sense. It cuts out an entire middle section. There's an actress, I don't want to be this guy, but there's an actress who's an Asian girl, and her accent is so thick you can't understand what she's saying. And I'm Asian, everyone. I'm Asian, and I couldn't understand a countryman person's accent. So, just...
Countrywoman.
Countrywoman's accent. And, but apart from all of that, Colin...
Farrell.
Farrell, yes. Colin Farrell. Actually does... yeah. Brain fart again. Yes. No, he actually said about this movie, Miami Vice, I didn't like it so much. He admitted, I thought it was style over substance, and I accept a good bit of the responsibility. He was struggling with drugs at the time.
Oh.
And alcohol during filming, and he said he wasn't focused on his performance. And boy, can you tell, because he's just sleepwalking through this whole movie. And then he said, I just completely fell to shit on that one.
Okay,
so
let's
acknowledge
it.
Exactly. It actually makes it better.
If you say, look, I'm sorry, I fucked up.
Exactly. Okay. It's all good. I'm Colin Farrell.
I'll try to get better next movie. Time.
Okay. Just watch SWAT. It's all good.
Check me out on Scrubs. I was pretty good there.
Was he on Scrubs?
Yeah.
Where?
He was in a guest episode role.
No way.
Way.
All right. I'm looking that up.
All right.
Number 10, man.
My number 10 comes with an apology to Wayne. Sorry.
What?
Sorry. It's George Clooney. Clue in Batman. Now, it's not all his fault.
It's definitely not his fault.
I'll be the first
all his fault.
To acknowledge, but he's very wooden. He's completely uninspiring. Batman's meant to get your blood churning, not in an angry kind of way. He's meant to be like standing up for what...
Oh, no. He just played it like the doctor on ER. That's who he was. And
I wish I had the music cue for the ER music right now.
Yes, I remember this. And I remember him talking about it. He's obviously very open about how he killed the franchise and stuff like that.
He didn't kill the franchise, but he contributed to its death.
Well, the idea of putting George Clooney in there at the time was so weird. To me, it was as weird as Michael Keaton.
Well, exactly. I think the whole Batman franchise, and Val Kilmer even. Like, come
Val
on.
Kilmer, I got, man. I got Val Kilmer, because at least he's Iceman and stuff. I don't know. Like, it was.
But it was that... I
love Batman Forever. I know I saw it again, and it was not as good, but anyway.
Oh, thank God you said that, because I was reaching for the soundboard.
No, but yeah, I don't know. He admits that it's shit, but he's... I think he actually said once that he played it gay. George Clooney actually did this.
Okay. Yeah. Whether Batman's straight or gay.
No, but like that was an amusing like...
In 1996, that's a weird... So gay is boringly...
No,
like,
he just said he wanted to... He said he didn't know which way to go with the character, so he played him gay. He said, I decided in my head that he was a little bit gay.
But my point is, that doesn't explain
it doesn't
phone
explain, D. It doesn't explain the phone
if D. If anything, it would be the opposite. It'd be exuberant at that stage. Like, I mean, you know, what was a cliche about what gay people were.
Oh, no. I think he was just making a joke in an interview one time. But he was when Alfred is dying in front of him, George Clooney's face is... He's kind of got a fucking smile on his face. It's an
terrible
odd thing that he's doing.
He's
like,
really
smiling,
terrible.
Like,
I'm glad you're not arguing with me about this. No, he's terrible.
Batman and Robin sucked, man. I saw it again and I tried to like it and I failed.
Yeah, no one could like that film. All right, your number 9.
My number 9 is Robert De Niro in Righteous Kill.
You could nominate probably 15...
Everything he did since...
A dozen films.
Yeah,
since
pretty much.
2000.
No, that's right. Robert De Niro is kind of the phone-in king now.
It's
apart from a few guns
okay,
that he
likes.
Here's
the problem, right? Robert De Niro is so good at peak De Niro.
Yes.
Right? That I think him just doing a decent job seems phoned in. That makes any sense.
I think maybe. Maybe you're right. Maybe he's run for his own back because he was so good.
I can't remember if I saw Righteous Kill, but I know you've talked about it before.
Well, he's doing stuff like... Exactly. Righteous Kill is him and Al Pacino. And at the time when it came out, it was like, this is the first time these guys have worked together since whatever. Right? Heat. I don't know.
Well, they were in Heat first.
Yeah, in Heat.
They shared one scene.
Yeah. But then, you know, it's like there's not many of these movies. And during the Italian premiere, De Niro actually said he felt guilty about the swelling crowd that was there to see him and Pacino because Variety reported this. De Niro turned to his co-star Al Pacino and expressed regret that all these people were here to celebrate a movie that was little more than a standard issue cop thriller. And he said, this is a great reaction, but it would be nice if they were here for a movie that we were proud about. Next time we'll do the one we like. and that's The Irishman. That's the that's the thing that they got together on.
That film is, despite what you say, Wayne.
It's very good. It's not for me, but it is. There are excellent. Look, this The Craftsman shit is amazing. It just wasn't for me. But in this movie, you can actually tell that everyone had checked out because he's just going through the stages, and there's nothing special about this movie at all.
There's nothing righteous at all about it.
No, it's shit. It should just be called Kill Your Senses.
That's what the joke went right through my head too.
So, yeah, it's shit, man. And don't even bother with this movie. Hey, even Al Pacino is doing his usual shit, and it's not interesting.
All right, well, there you go. I've not seen that movie, so I'm just... I completely forgot it.
Exactly.
My number nine is a film you definitely have seen, Wayne. You're going to be so, so pleased with me that I'm calling this out. My number nine is from Sin City. It's Michael Madsen.
Oh, my God! This is on my honorable mentions, and I was going to put it in just to piss you off, but I found better ones. You agree that your boyfriend, Michael Madsen...
My boyfriend.
Your boyfriend, Michael Madsen, actually phoned it in.
Through the 90s, Michael Madsen, after Mr. Blonde, his role of Mr. Blonde, which is iconic. Like,
and I always thought, what a fat cunt.
Fuck you, fuckball.
I don't agree at all. Yeah, he is perfect in that film. And Mr. Blonde's, he is what elevates it from being wonderful to being even better than that. Like,
that scene was
Keitel's
insane.
Great. Tim Roth's great. Everyone's great. Super Sammy's great. But it's Michael Madsen's stone cold psycho that just makes your blood run cold.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And it's perfect. Like, just, he seems so laconic, and like, and that's his style. He's laconic. He's laid back. And then in this film, he doesn't give no fucks.
Yeah. Do you know who he is?
Yeah. What's... Okay, Hardigan? Is that who he's talking
yeah,
to?
Yeah, yeah.
Hi, Hardigan. Yeah. Oh, come on. He's never worked with Rodriguez again. And Tarantino took 10 years to work with him again after this film. So he was in a brief role in... what's it called? The Hateful Eight.
Oh, that's right. Is it because he's turned to shit as an actor? Because apparently he's really hard to... I've heard stories that he's a bit of a brick to get along with.
Okay.
And it looks like it. Like,
I haven't heard those stories myself.
No, I mean, it's more like that he has trouble. Like, he made some bad decisions with... like, he did Wyatt Earp instead of, like, Pulp Fiction and stuff like that. And he's been grumpy. Well, I don't know. I heard a couple of things like that.
Okay. But,
he was supposed to be the new... To me, he could have been the new Robert Mitchum. He's very Mitchum-y.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? Like, and it just didn't work out for him. It's a weird one. And you're saying that in this movie, he's basically talking. I remember when
the funny thing is if it was a bigger role, this would be higher on my list. But he's barely in it.
Yeah, right. But even what he did, like, even when he shot Hardigan in that movie, I was like, oh my god, what's he doing? It was just like,
yeah,
you know, it's nothing.
Yeah, you fucking cunt.
That's it. Direct line from the movie. Okay. Hardigan turned and said, "There you cunt." Okay, all right.
Yeah, and even when I did that line, I was like, I pointed my handgun at Wayne, and I was like, limp wrist and went, eh, whatever. It was okay. So terrible, and he deserves all the shit.
I'm very proud of you for admitting that. Well done. My number eight is Michael Caine in Jaws: The Revenge.
Oh, yeah. Low,
low. Okay,
how about this?
No, low. We should do this.
Low, low.
No. If you're gonna do this, Paul,
low,
the way, yeah, you should be that.
Low.
That's how it should go. All right? Can't believe I threw in with your bullshit.
Yes.
Okay, so everyone, Michael Caine. I saw this movie in the drive-ins. Okay, drive-ins. Okay, and I remember looking at this movie, going, it's a movie about Jaws who was. Got pissed off with Roy Schneider's wife and now he's tracking her across tracking her and her family across the world to try and chomp a bitch while she's like on a boat or some shit, right?
Ironically, Wayne doesn't ever try that hard to chomp a bitch.
Every time, motherfucker. Fuck. Anywho. Oh, what a bitch. This movie.
And by bitch, I mean lady.
You can't back out of them, please. Oh, damn. Okay. Oh, fuck. I got a cheekache from laughing. All right. Oh, damn. Okay.
A cheekache.
Cheekache, motherfucker. That's what's happening. Are you actually finding that funny? Cheekache is a thing.
I might have it. I've never complained about it.
Oh, well.
You bitch.
Oh, shit. I forgot what I was going to say now.
Chase Chief Brody's wife.
That's right, Michael Caine. So, look, long story. When he turns up in his...
Michael Caine.
Yes,
that's what we're here for.
Michael Caine is the guy who phoned in his performance. He turns up and actually, it's a shit one. He lands his plane on the sea and he kind of gets her out of there. And it's fine, but I was amazed to actually see him in there. And Michael Caine, of course, has a famous quote about this.
Oh, he does. I'm glad you brought this up.
I want you to say it because you know it.
Okay. I have never seen it, but by all accounts, it is terrible. However, I have seen the house that it built, and it is terrific.
That's actually not as bad as I was expecting you to go. I didn't know you would do the Michael Caine. I thought after a while you'd get very, very loud. Like Michael Caine.
Yeah, I'm not pretending I've worked on that.
No, it's good. It's good. I think actually I did appreciate that. So well done. Michael Caine's in Jaws the Revenge is my number 8.
I love the fact he just takes ownership and just says, you know what? Yeah, this was fucking turd. And I knew it was a turd.
Michael Caine.
But they offered me enough money to star on a turd. Right. So I did it.
I would have done it too, Mike.
And I hope to this day, because that quote was from like 12, 13 years ago. Mm-hmm. I hope that to this day he's never watched it.
Yeah, I know.
I hope he goes to his grave. And he never watches this film.
Like, think about it. If you're, he wasn't even that old back then, but like, if you were an aging actor or whatever, and everyone was like, here you go, 12 million, what do you reckon? Turn up for 7 days.
I don't reckon it'd be 12 million for this film, but okay.
One, no.
$20.
$20 cash. I'm there. Yes, absolutely.
All right, my number 8 then. Is this where we're up to? Yes. Now, Wayne, as much as you're happy with my 9, you won't be happy with my 8.
Uh-huh.
My number 8 is from the Italian Job. It's Edward fucking Norton.
That's my number 7.
Oh, it is. Okay,
because here's the thing. Yeah. Please, actually, no, you go.
I don't like this movie. You do.
I really like
it. I think
like
it's really terrible.
Really?
And it's not helped by the fact that Edward Norton seems to be playing one note the entire film.
Now, you bring up something interesting because, in my opinion, I know even though we don't agree on the film, right? This is an odd one because it is, he's phoning it in for sure, but I don't think it's a bad performance. How's that?
Well, then why is it on your list?
Because he phoned it in. I can tell he doesn't give a fuck, but I quite enjoyed looking at it.
I think he's terrible. It doesn't help the film, which really? Is also terrible. So, do you know the story behind why he was terrible?
Why?
So, basically, he did Primal Fear in 1995, so
yes.
8 years before this. And when he signed on with Paramount to do this film, he signed on for a three-picture deal, right?
Standard at the time.
Yep. And he ummed and ahed and fucking said yes and no so many times. Eventually, they said, all right, just one more picture, which in and of itself is kind of amazing, right?
Yeah. Let him out.
But then there was some option where they gave him 24 months to pick one of their films. And he just said, no, 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 no. And they said, well, fuck you then, cunt. Exact wording.
Dear Mr. Norton, fuck you then, cunt. Go on.
Italian Job, it is. That's what you're doing. And he had no choice but to have to do it. And they were going to sue him millions of dollars if he didn't.
So he's pissed the whole time?
Yeah. So he's just angry. And so here's the quote from his lawyer. Both Norton and Paramount kept up a positive face, but his lawyer, Marty Singer, claimed Paramount threatened to sue Norton if he declined the role. And so rather than get involved in extensive litigation, Mr. Norton agreed to do the movie. Singer added, he wasn't looking to shirk his responsibility. He never said, I'm not going to do it. He's just the kind of actor who will not do movies unless he feels strongly about them. So yes, he did say, I'm not going
to
do it.
Yes, he did. Oh, he's just going to like bum off together. It says, I read a little bit of info. He said he got paid $1 million instead of his usual $10 million. That's why they let him only do one, right? So basically, they got off a bit cheaper as well.
There's a reason you don't see Edward Norton, because he's a very, very talented man. And that's
he is.
Why it's here on my list as well, because he's better than this. He should be giving some great roles.
You really didn't prefer like his performance?
No, again.
I thought it was great.
No, terrible.
He's like, you know,
more than that,
and stuff.
He's terrible. The film's terrible. But beyond that, it tarnishes his legacy his career in Hollywood going forward. And then
that's where he got bumped from the Marvel movies.
Well, he was a bit of a prick around.
Yeah, but they actually said it like almost in their statement. They said, we want people who are more collaborative or whatever.
Yeah, because he turned up there with rewritten pages.
Yeah, on the Hulk set.
You can't do that.
No, you can't do any of that shit. So this is some bullshit. Like, either sign to it or don't sign to it.
And then, of course, there's the whole American History X drama and all that stuff. Yeah, so he's notoriously difficult. If it was a top 10 actors that are difficult to work with, Edward Norton would be right near the top.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. So that's my 8, your 7. So back to me for my 7?
Yes.
Correct? Yeah. So this is Natalie Portman in Thor the Dark World.
I was wondering if you were going to say this or Star Wars.
Yeah, could be Star Wars too. I think Natalie Portman is an incredibly talented actress.
her problem in Star Wars was fucking George Lucas.
There's no way she chose to talk like this.
I'm less down on her in that role than I am in this role.
Yeah.
Because you can see she's checked out.
Now, you know about this one, of course, right?
Yeah.
You know why?
Because she signed on to start, because Patty Jenkins was originally slated to direct
The
Dark
Patty
World,
Jenkins, who did Monster and all that shit.
And eventually Wonder Woman.
Wonder Woman, yeah.
And now Wonder Woman 2, which we're
but
all...
But this is before we knew she could do Wonder Woman. Yep. She was doing Monster. She was a serious female director.
And so Portman was keen as fuck to start with her. Fair enough. That's no worries at all. For creative differences, Patty Jenkins left the project and Alan Taylor was brought on. And we understand now that Alan Taylor shouldn't really be... Well, between this and Terminator fucking Genesis.
Genesis.
Yeah.
Oh, he did that too.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's not a big budget film director. He's a big grandiose TV episode director.
Okay.
There's a big difference because he did a lot of Game of Thrones as big episodes.
So
she wasn't happy about that. And I think she just mentally checked out because she looks like she did not give two fucks. Now we know she's coming back for Thor, Love and Thunder, and she's going to be the mighty Thor.
Because it's Taika Waititi?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So she's... fell back. And no one ever shat on her for it directly, but you can see. Like, it wasn't like Marvel said, you're gone. It's not like Edward Norton. They didn't come out and say anything about her in the same kind of way. But this film is a turd. She doesn't help it at all. It's probably the worst film in the MCU.
Yeah, Thor is widely considered to be two. I mean, it's widely considered to be that
one. Come up to it. I rewatched my daughter. We're just about... Do you want to watch this one? We skipped Iron Man 2 because that's, to my mind, the second worst film in the MCU.
Yeah, I would agree too. Unfortunately. Although Sam Rockwell. Anyway, I actually watched Thor the Dark World last night because I was thinking about putting this one in.
Yeah.
It's in my honorable mentions. And yeah, you can see it. I actually skipped to her scenes. She's not doing a terrible job because I think professionalism shines through on some level. But yeah, it was... was nothing, so it's
You know how I think about this? Like... It's Friday afternoon. It's 2:00.
Yeah.
You're in your job.
Yeah.
Whatever your job is.
Yep.
The weekend is 2-3 hours away, depending on your job at max. You're like, I'll do a half ass on this to get me through to the end time, and I'll pick it up again on Monday. That's what these roles are for these people.
It's this Friday afternoon for these folks. Yeah. And God, great work if you can get it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I agree with that one. Nice one.
All right, what's your number six?
My number six is, you're going to love this. Possibly, certainly the worst movie I've seen in years.
Oh, damn.
And in fact, the worst movie ever, according to Rotten Tomatoes. It's Ballistic X versus. Now, funny one, this one, folks, because first of all, this movie is about two fucking, really badass assassin CIA agents who have to fight each other, but then they realize that they should all join forces and fucking go up against the big enemy. And it's shit, right? Now, the film is extremely crap. It was developed in tandem with this video game that went out, and the film took way, way longer to produce so they had to just release the video game, and the video game became more
popular. There was a video game.
There was a video game. It was actually a hot part of the whole deal. And at one point, Wesley Snipes and Jet Li were going to star, then Vin Diesel and Sylvester Stallone. And then they ended up with...
Wait, Vin Diesel and Sylvester Stallone?
Yeah, there was no character at all.
No gender difference then,
nope.
Okay.
It was just whoever, and then they ended up with Antonio Banderas and Lucy Liu, who at the time weren't big, big names, but they just had zero chemistry. The person I'm grabbing on here is Lucy Liu, because if you watch this movie, and unfortunately I have twice...
What? Right?
Because I wanted to see how shit it was again. It's really, 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 really shit. It just disappears, right? But Antonio Banderas is kind of treating it as well as he can. He's kind of treating all the words like Shakespeare. You can see he's sweating and this and that. Lucy Liu doesn't give a fuck. It was obvious that she did not care the whole time.
Is it wrong that I find Lucy Liu's detachment kind of hot?
Well, Paul, unfortunately us men are like that. She ignores you, now you value her higher. It sucks, but there you are.
No!
But in this one, I don't know if you got it. She came across... blank rather than aloof, you know what I mean? So it just came to
that's
nothing.
Less hot.
Yeah, so there you are. So, by the way, Lucy Liu was nominated for the 2002 Stinkers Bad Movie Awards Worst Actress Award.
All the Razzies.
It's actually slightly different. She lost to Madonna for her performance in Swept Away. That's what happened that year.
I think Madonna won a lot of awards that year and not in the right direction. All right, here's my left turn. My number six is an acting performance that could be considered just flat out bad. But I put it here because I believe this gentleman won the Academy Award around this point in time for a different role.
Oh, yes.
So it wasn't just bad. It looked it just seemed like his one note performance was so lazy and hence phoned in. I'm talking about Eddie Redmayne in Jupiter Ascending.
Ah, interesting you say. Because he was, what was that movie he should have won it for?
Didn't he win it for The Theory of Everything?
Oh, it was the one where he was a cross-dresser or something. It was...
The Danish Girl.
The Danish Girl, that's right.
I thought he won for The Theory of Everything. All right, now we have to look
He may well. He may have.
Yes. So he won it for playing Stephen Hawking in The Theory of Everything in 2014. And he was nominated for The Danish Girl.
Good.
But he later said that really a transgender person should play a transgender person. So, you know, full credit to him. He seems like a good bloke. Seems to get his head straight on, set on straight.
Sure.
But here, this is his follow-up role to winning the Academy Award. What the fuck?
Jupiter Ascending is that bloody Wachowski siblings.
Wachowski siblings film where he's Channing the bad Kaden. Guy. He's like, he's talking like this.
Really?
Yeah, that's his one note. He's just whispering with menace.
Right.
He's so bad.
I think I remember seeing bits of this and just going, I can't handle Channing Tatum as a slightly catty or something, cat-looking thing.
Eddie Redmayne won the Golden Raspberry for the worst actor. So 1 year after he wins Academy Award, he wins this. So he's bad in it, but to me, when you just give a voice and that's all you're bothering to do...
Can we assume the...
Phone the fucking...
Yeah, yeah. And I think, who knows what happens with this stuff? With that's the director's choice to go, no, do it this way.
And I'm sure this was filmed before he won the Academy Award, so you know what I mean? Yeah, nevertheless, you can go from being that to this, it earns a place in this spot, far as I'm concerned.
Good one. Nice. My number five is, again, one of the worst movies I've seen, and the movie is called Hollywood Homicide. Now,
who are you nominating here?
It's actually Harry.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, now this is a forgettable film, but a memorable experience for me. When Hollywood Homicide was coming out, I remember seeing the poster and being really excited. It was like Harrison Ford and Josh Hartnett in a buddy cop film. Harrison Ford, man, and Josh Hartnett was kind of blowing up at the time, too.
Oh, yeah, he blew up in the early 2000s.
Early big time, right? So yeah. I remember that even so big, MTV Movie Awards that year, they even had Harrison Ford and Josh Hartnett come out and do an award, and everyone went apeshit because Harrison Ford was there. And this was supposed to be one of the movies of the summer. It went on to be one of the biggest pieces of shits I've ever seen.
Did Ron Shelton direct this? The guy who did Bull Durham and White Men Can't Jump?
I'm not sure, but you can check.
You keep talking, I'll find out.
But I'll tell you this. The guy who wrote this film was the same guy who wrote Dark Blue, which is this gritty cop thriller. Kurt Russell and Scott Speedman. And that was a really good movie. And he came up with this shit idea that Harrison Ford's character should be a policeman who's a part-time real estate agent. And it was really shit. And apparently both actors signed up.
Just directed by Ron Shelton.
Yeah, okay. Both actors signed up to the movie before it was written. I actually watched the making of on the DVD because I wanted an explanation of why it was so shit. And you can see Harrison Ford and Josh Hartnett say over and over, we signed on to this movie without knowing what it was. Before it was written. And
Tin Cup. That's who Ron Shelton directed.
Man, I like Tin Cup.
What Ron Shelton directed.
Something went wrong here. It was the writing. Honestly, it was the writing. And you can see Harrison Ford actually...
Why would you sign up to a fucking film if you haven't seen the script?
There must have been some deal made by some agent, and come on, we got these two guys together, it's going to be golden, and then this happens. You're right. And you can tell that they don't like the script. Harrison Ford has to gyrate in front of a two-way mirror at one stage, and he's like, "Fow, ha!" Like this, it's really, really weird. And he hated it from the beginning. So did everyone, so did I. Piece of shit, everyone.
Fair enough. All right, my number five. We're going to bounce straight back to you, Wayne, because this is where Michael Caine in Jaws of Revenge comes in.
Nice one. Do you have a Michael Caine impression?
No.
Okay.
But I'll work on it.
Yeah, okay.
I'll unveil it in episode 300.
Yeah, okay. Let's do a couple. Let's do one there. All right. My number four is Wesley Snipes in, you know which one, Paul.
Blade Trinity,
yeah. Son.
Slightly low.
Okay. Now, first of all, Blade Trinity was the one where we had Patton Oswalt and Ryan Reynolds and Jessica Biel, and Blade had basically, you know, the two good-looking people was the offsiders for Blade. They were fighting vampires. Wesley Snipes did not like that at all. He hated people. And now, Paul's talked about this in the past. Tell me what happened to Wesley Snipes, Paul. What did he do? He was so pissed off with the crew and with the director and stuff that he started becoming very... He just basically smoked weed all the time, got baked like a motherfucker, got so shat with all of his relationships with illness. He actually started communicating with the director via post-it notes.
That's the story.
Signed, Blade. Which means that he had already
not
stopped
even signed Wesley.
Yeah.
Or Snaps Blade. Or WS.
Yes. Blade. I don't know. This was like,
you fucking idiot.
He's such an asshole. And I actually, again, went and got the probably laser disc, I don't know at the time, and listened to the director's commentary. There's a commentary of Wesley Snipes and
David S. Goyer?
Yes. Talking about how, and there's actually different tracks. There's one with just the producers. And
oh, okay. So they're not, are they talking together with each other in the same room?
I think so. I think they are, because I know they don't like each other now, right? Or,
well, apparently, the story goes that Snipes tried to strangle.
Oh, God,
David
really?
Escoia. Now, I need to be fair here.
Yeah.
It's higher on my list. We'll see how very shortly. Just recently, like I'm talking 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Wesley Snipes was out in the media again refuting this story. He said, motherfuckers. He didn't say that.
Yeah.
But eventually he did. I was an executive producer. I had some responsibility on this film to...
Recently he said this.
Yeah. Like November 2nd, these reports dropped all over the web.
He said, yeah. What did he say?
Right. So 2 weeks before recording, let's say it this way. And he was basically saying, I'm meant to have some accountability and responsibility as a producer on this film.
Yeah.
So that's where I was giving critiques as. So this idea that he kind of played the race card and he said, a black man strangling a white director, if that really happened, I'd be in fucking jail. Well, you were in jail. You went to jail for tax evasion, but that's a different story altogether.
Yeah.
But then some of that's undone by the fact that he sued New Line, I think it was.
Wesley Snipes did.
Yeah, later on, basically saying $5 million in damages because he wasn't paid his full amount as a producer and an actor. So there's a lot of bad blood here and it's not clear. So I don't see what Patton Oswalt's end is here to come out and make shit up.
No. He's telling the truth.
But I've not heard anybody else come out in support of that story either. So we've got to be a little bit careful. But whatever. The point is we're talking about what's on screen and what's on screen between Blades 1 and 2. And he's not a highly emotive character, right?
No, he's like brooding.
He's a stoic, brooding kind of, you know, alpha.
Dark figure.
Male dark figure, yeah. In Blade 3, he's barely making an effort. And there's a lot of shots not of his face.
Yeah. Is that why?
And apparently it's because they cut around his bullshit performance.
Really?
That's there to see on screen.
You know,
there's no refuting that.
Yeah. Well, at the time, I remember not minding the movie, and the problem with it was that Ryan Reynolds was too funny. That's what I thought, right?
Yeah.
I'd actually probably like to watch it again knowing that, because I remember them talking about how he was like making demands, like, I'm walking out of that room alone. I don't want a shot with three of us in it. I want one of us. And they were like, well, how are we going to do that? You're supposed to. He said, I don't care, but I'm leaving that room alone. And then he'd go do it and they'd be like, fuck, film it. So all that kind of shit. Yeah, he don't care. He don't care. He don't care.
Yeah. It kind of refutes his argument that, well, if you're an executive producer, you should fucking care. Like, sure, you want to put the best thing out there on the screen. Yeah, you can critique and give constructive criticism to the director. But if you're in the film as well, don't you want to... You're servicing yourself.
He would say that I know Blade best because I am Blade. Yeah. And I think Blade needs to be more prominent than the other two. That's what he'd say.
All the proof's in the pudding that, apart from going to jail for tax evasion and all the rest of it, that... Barely he was cast for 10 years following this film.
He was in Dolomite. It's the last thing he was in for like years.
Yeah, he's been in other films since, like Skinwalkers or whatever the fuck it was called, Western thing. Not good films, don't get me wrong. It's not like he's like, oh, Wesley Snipes, yay. Dolomite might be his first return to form. Dolomite is my name. So take it for what you will.
Fair enough.
I think you're a little low on this one. I think I had an instant top three. It's somewhere in there.
Okay, good to hear. What is your number four?
My number four is J-Lo.
Who?
In J-Lo. Dark Phoenix.
Well, we're going back. That's my number three. So please tell us.
And once again, we're very close here. Apparently, she wasn't going to do it. And now I understand the legacy of why she wasn't going to. So there's no knock on her.
Yeah.
If Bryan Singer was doing Dark Phoenix, she was out.
Yeah, because of all that shit that happened with him?
Whether that was because of that, or she didn't like working with him, or whatever the professional on set.
Apparently, he just leaves.
Yeah, well, that was Bohemian Rhapsody's story. I don't know whether that was applying to Dark Phoenix. Well, maybe it was.
Yeah.
Because they're not that... In fact, this one was...
Yeah, apparently mixed...
No, I don't think he was ever employed for this one. But he was basically shunted after all the shit came out about him in Bohemian Rhapsody and all that kind of stuff. So once Simon Kinberg took over, she came to him and said, well, if you're going to direct, I'm in.
Yeah.
Doesn't look like she's in. Looks like she could give two fucking shits in this film. Like, she is so bored.
They were just waiting for this one to be done because even Michael Fassbender didn't give a fuck. You can tell.
Fassbender, I'm not going to give him a pass. He doesn't make my top 10, but he's not good in it. But by comparison to her, Where I don't, does her face? I mean, I know she's under a thick amount of makeup in a lot of her scenes and
yep.
whatever else.
Yep.
But does her face change expression from being incredulous to amazed to being upset to being almost dead?
Yeah.
She's awful in this film, and this is just before. If you need any more and further proof, just before she goes off on hiatus and disappears, like this and Red Sparrow came out or shot around the same time.
Mm.
Has she been anything since?
Good question. I've not heard of J-Lo in a while. I'm sure she's
and
done
she made an announcement, basically, I'm just going to take a break for a while. Good on her. You're allowed to do that. You've made
absolutely.
Your millions.
Absolutely.
Knock yourself out, whatever. But I think that's a sign, again, when you're at the point of burnout, which is what we're basically describing here. Eh.
Well, if you think about it, this movie, she dies halfway through. Mystique dies halfway or around halfway. Schmuck.
Yeah. Yep.
So she's not in it for a lot of it. I wonder if that was written in. It's like, fucking just kill this bitch because I don't want to do it. I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Maybe.
That's, who knows? Who knows? Rumor. She's a big star. She can get stuff done. I don't know.
So, yeah, so. Very disappointing. Worst performance. One Absolutely. Of the worst performances for me.
You can ever. Totally tell. Mm. Yeah. Well, that means we're going straight back to you because that was my number three, son.
All right. My number three. Also going to bounce right to you because here's where Wesley Snipes and Blade Trinity falls around. Do we have the time? Top two?
I wonder. Okay. My number two is Marlon Brando.
Damn it! Slightly low. I reckon we've got it flipped around.
Oh, okay. The okay. Island of Dr. Moreau.
Yes, exactly. Okay. Exactly. This is fucking fascinating.
This
please.
Is the most fascinating thing ever. What was the name of that damn documentary?
I can't remember. It's, yeah. It's excellent.
It's about the whole production yep. of this thing, which was shot in Australia. It's got an Australian cast, and it's considered the worst movie ever made.
It was shot
made.
In the Queensland, in the rainforests yep. yep. and around there.
Around there.
And, yeah, I can't remember what the name is. Damn it.
Yeah, neither can either. Anyway, that director who did Hardware.
Richard Stanley.
Yeah, Richard Stanley and stuff. So,
and
I mean,
Color Out of Space is his return.
That's almost a whole episode just talking about that fucking...
23 years later, he shot Color Out of Space. That's how long it took him to get over the trauma of this... film.
Wow. And he was a real weird guy. Like, he was a typical director guy, you know what I mean? Like, he's this sort of like...
Well, I did a bit of research, hippie-ish. But you go first. What is it about this film?
It's about...
If you get all the points, great. I'll just...
No, I don't think so.
I'll cede the floor to you.
Long story short, like, about the Marlon Brando... Like, Val Kilmer's fucked as well. And there's a long story about Val Kilmer, all right?
And okay, now you've beat me to point.
Okay.
Now this is my number one.
Yeah.
Right? And this is why it's my number one. Because you've got all the Brando shit... Right?
Yeah.
And then your second biggest star
yep.
is Val Kilmer acting like a fucking prima donna.
Like a little pussy.
And being terrible on screen.
He was shit.
Which is what elevated above my number one. If I wonder if it's the same one. It has to be. I cannot believe you would let this person slide on your phoned in list. So
No way. But yeah, okay. So Marlon Brando actually was, because of the lot of shit that he had gone through, he definitely signed up on this thing. And even in that documentary, you can tell, he actually says to one of the other actresses, like, who cares what any of these dickheads say? Okay? You're beautiful. I'm rich. We're just doing this shit. Let's just fuck with these guys. He didn't care about the production at all and actively made it hard. At one stage, he said to the producers, listen, I want to scrap the ending. And he pitched
He changed everything on the fly.
He pitched it with like a dolphin or something. He had this, and the producer's like, what the fuck?
He also not fell in love with in a sexual way, but he formed this really close bond with... The 28 inch tall two.
Yes. What's his name?
Actor.
Again?
I can't remember his name. Nelson, something or other.
Yeah, yeah.
And just wanted him in every scene.
Yep.
And which, just kept insisting. He went so far as to put an ice bucket on his head and said, I just want to do this. But no, but Mr. Brando does not say, we're doing it this way.
And
can you imagine that?
Yes. And imagine you being the director, that poor fella.
Bloke who directed Hardware.
Yeah, he
which
had
is
one movie
fantastic.
On his belt.
No,
yeah.
He'd done another one called Dust Devil, which is. Yeah, not as
but
much.
But he's an up-and-coming director,
yeah,
right?
He's very young. He'd have been early 30s at best.
Yep, yep. And then you got Marlon Brando being a bitch like this and Val Kilmer being an asshole and this old Aussie crew and he's not used to it and you're out in the jungle they shot on this fucking the area, you know?
Yeah.
That would have been so ridiculously bad to take care of. And he had to use, like, even put, like, fucking muffins in, like an earpiece in just to get his lines.
Yes.
He refused to...
Yeah.
Refused
which apparently he did for... And this is why I got to my number one.
Yeah.
It wasn't just his film. He had an earpiece in for the last three films he did, including The Freshman with Matthew Broderick.
So someone could feed him lines?
Yeah. Because he couldn't even be bothered fucking learning them. That's your trade!
Yeah. And you know what? If you don't know the line until you hear it in your ear, how are you going to give it any color? Like, how are you going to, like,
look,
decide
maybe
how you...
that's your skill.
Yeah.
Maybe, so you said to me... A line, I can give it some color to use your phrase very fast, but it's not professional.
No, he like, hasn't thought about it.
Brando
enough.
Was at his in his heyday one of the greatest actors of all time. No one's going to dispute that. He's incredible. Godfather, On the Waterfront, all those kinds of things.
Yeah,
he's phenomenal. Full credit to the man, but clearly he read his own press just one too many times.
And he's just too old to give a fuck.
And just, but...
Do you know what I mean?
Like, just retire.
Yeah.
Why be in films and shit on?
He wants another $4 or $5 million.
Yeah, but that's unacceptable.
I'm not saying, it's not right, but that's what he
That's why he's my number one.
Fair enough.
You know, because fuck this guy. You know, he's dead. You're not supposed to speak ill of the dead, but clearly he was an absolute cancer.
You could probably say that director's career was fucked as a result of this.
He killed Richard Stanley's career. Yeah. So John Frankenheimer, who's since passed away as well, was brought in to retrieve this project. And he brought in a screenwriter, Lars M. Hutchinson. And here's what he said. He was playing the god of Morales Island and emerging as the god of production was way beyond board with making movies. He was overweight, unprepared, mocking, dismissive, on the razor's edge where caprice becomes malice. The case for the prosecution is therefore easily made. He was indeed here to sabotage this movie. You're now... trying to torpedo. This is the screenwriter who was brought in to fix the script saying that.
Yeah.
John Frankenheimer was so aghast, not just to Brando, but also Kilmer. When Kilmer's last line was, he said, get this fucking prima donna off my set.
Really?
And that's why it also elevated to my number one. Because Kilmer, meanwhile, he was making excuses of Brando. Guy's daughter committed suicide right towards the start, and apparently she did.
Oh, really?
And he bought a fucking atoll near where France was testing nuclear bombs. So he was worried about his islands that he bought.
This is Val or?
No, it was Val talking about Brando.
Brando.
Make excuses for yourself, motherfucker. This film almost single-handedly torpedoed
Val Kilmer's career. I didn't even see how they wanted to do it as well. Because him with the rabbit in the beginning and stuff like that, he just became... it's like almost like... I remember when you saw it and you told me back years ago, you were like... He almost like he wanted to be the good guy, but then he couldn't, and then something. He just didn't care.
Hutchinson rewriting the script over and over to try and make it work. This is one of the great train wrecks of Hollywood. But when your actors, particularly your two leads, are trying to wreck it, what fucking hope do you have?
No, you're done. You're done. Yeah, what a bunch of pricks.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
All right, my number two, and I suspect it's your number one. Let's hear. It's Bruce Willis.
Oh, of course.
And I chose A Good Day to Die Hard.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. Not Cop Out, because I haven't seen it.
Oh, God. Okay, I chose Cop Out.
Yeah, okay.
So we may as well just do this.
Bruce Willis, one and two, I get it. No argument. So we're not going to be able to separate it on that basis. So it'll be our lower list that determine who wins this week.
Yeah.
Bruce Willis has given zero fucks, except in Looper, I would suggest, since 2000. And that was a running gag in the Facebook community.
Absolutely.
Heaps of people nominated his entire career since 2000. Here's why this one is the most egregious.
Go on. So this is A Good Day to Die Hard. Who's the bad guy?
I don't remember. Jai Courtney's in it, though, as his son.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Russian separatists, I think he's fighting.
So is that number five?
Yeah, five.
Yeah, number five.
Directed
by
John Moore, I think. Right. Now, this is your bread and butter. Now, I know Moonlighting brought him attention. I know Moonlighting got him the Die Hard gig.
Yeah.
But Die Hard is what catapulted Bruce Willis to stardom.
Mm-hmm.
It's what puts him in the stratosphere or in the orbit of Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sylvester Stallone and Jean-Claude Van Damme and, God dare I say it, Steven Seagal. Right? Bruce Willis is the fifth name in that list in the late 80s, early 90s for action heroes.
He was higher than Steven Seagal.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, they're the big five.
Totally.
Okay. This is his fifth sequel. Die Hard 2, Die Harder, Die Hard with a Vengeance, Live Free or Die Hard. And you're not trying in this film? Okay. You don't try and Cop Out because, fuck it, I just signed on to this shit. Right? But this is the legacy. This should be what defines your career. And you can't even be fucking asked not phoning in here. Fuck Bruce Willis, man.
What's funny about this, man, is that Kevin Smith talks a lot about Die Hard 4.0 because he was in it. Right?
Yes.
Or whatever, Live Free Die Hard. And he said that Bruce Willis was actually shutting down the director, Len Wiseman, at every turn saying, listen, this is your show, Len, but who among you have been here for every Die Hard movie? Obviously only him. He's like... I'm just trying to protect the franchise. I'm trying to protect the legacy of Die Hard, okay? It's got to be this. And he was like, this shot you've got with three of us in the shot? No, it should just be a single on John McClane. Shit like that.
Uncommonly.
Exactly.
Yeah, frequent.
There was
note here.
Huge shit like that. So that's why, and that's the funny thing. It's like he's, like you say, again, he's a victim of his privilege, not like, you know, he's
victim.
Not a victim. He's a product of his privilege.
Yes.
He's actually doing this shit because he can. And that's why it's offensive.
I see Bruce Willis. It's not a reason to watch it except as a train wreck.
Yeah.
Like Trauma Center, recent film with Nikki Whalen from fucking Neighbors in it, acts rings around fucking
what movie was
Bruce
that?
Willis. It's called Trauma Center. Watch it for our next top 10, last 10. Oh my God.
Really?
Oh my God.
Do you remember Death Wish? Did you see that?
Yeah, terrible.
That was a piece of shit as well.
It was a piece of shit.
Oh, fuck. Yeah.
So I get why he's number one. I haven't seen Cop Out, so I can't speak to that. But I just think this is the
That is my number one, so I'll just talk about that real
please
quick.
Please do. Yeah. But for me, that's why Die Hard 5, you're not even fucking bothering. You're phoning it in. Oh my God, that's awful.
Is he got any Die Hards left? Are we hearing things?
We keep hearing rumors. There could be another one.
Well, okay. Well, my Cop Out 1, real quick, is much the same, except he literally didn't. This one, he cared even less because there wasn't even a franchise for him to protect. It was simply this paycheck.
Yep.
Having said that, this movie is really shit. And it's one of those things we talk about all the time. I love Kevin Smith, but this is just horrendous and pretty much he can't make good movies anymore from what I can see.
This film traumatized Kevin Smith so bad, a la Island Dr. Moreau.
Oh, yeah.
Traumatizing Richard Stanley so bad.
Well, I love how Kevin Smith made money out of this bad story. He's been telling this story so often that now it's the thing that he's kind of known for. So yep. I'm a big fan of that. But yes, Bruce Willis basically crowded our top ones out.
All right, then. Let's give a quick recap there, Wayne. 10-3-1. So listeners can remember and vote accordingly in the Facebook community. What is your list?
10 was Miami Vice. 9, Robert De Niro in Righteous Kill. 8, Michael Caine in Jaws of Revenge. 7, Edward Norton, The Italian Job. 6, Lucy Liu in Ballistic X vs. Shit. 5, Harry in Hollywood Homicide. 4, Wesley Snipes in Blade Trinity. 3, Jennifer Lawrence in X-Men Dark Shit. And number 2 was Marlon Brando, the Alien Dr. Moreau. And number 1 was Bruce Willis in Cop Out.
All right. My number 10 is George Clooney in Batman and Robin. Number 9, Michael Madsen in Sin City. 8, Edward Norton in The Italian Job. 7, Natalie Portman in Thor, The Dark World. 6, Eddie Redmayne in Jupiter Ascending. 5, Michael Caine in Jaws, The Revenge.
Beautiful. Just beautiful.
4, J-Law in Dark Phoenix. 3, Wesley Snipes in Blade Trinity. 2, Bruce Willis in every film after 2000 except Looper, i.e., but in particular, A Good Day to Die Hard from 2013. And my number 1 is Marlon Brando in The Island of Dr. Moreau, ably supported by Val Kilmer in the same.
Boom!
That's nice our one, list. Kids. Only one mention, honorable mention for me. It's Johnny Depp in Transcendence.
I think I've blocked that whole movie out of my brain. So
God forbid. It's just, he's piece terrible. He got paid $20 million for it or some fucking shit, which just incenses me beyond belief. Anything honorable mentions for you, Wayne?
I was thinking about putting Prince of Thieves, Robin Hood, in there. Yeah. I was thinking about it, but that's only really because...
K-Cost?
Because he didn't even do an English accent. He's just like, fuck it, this is English courage.
It's a very good point.
You know, anyway, but that's the only one. Everyone else has been mentioned. All right, word.
Let's wrap it up then with your take on the subject at hand in a segment that we call the Pop 10.
Talk about...
Pop 10.
Talk about...
This week's Pop 10 with Stephen from the Super Retro Throwback Podcast. Wesley Snipes in Blade 3.
Blade.
Anything Bruce Willis did after Sixth Sense.
Big time.
Many, many of our responses. And then Morgan Freeman in Ted 2.
I didn't see that.
You haven't missed much. Judy, good friend from the Shaken Not Nerd Podcast. Michelle Williams in Venom.
Really? Oh, I thought you did great, but okay.
James L. Jones in the Lion King remake. And Ian McDiarmid in The Rise of Skywalker. Some hot takes there.
It is a hot take.
Nicholas Haskins from Mr. Nikolai's Kitchen. J-Law in X-Men Dark Phoenix. Mm-hmm. Adam Sandler in Uncut Gems.
What? That's the one he did that was good. Ooh. It should have been Adam Sandler in every other film.
You can't handle the truth.
And Wesley Snipes in Blade Trinity. Steve from the Everything I Learned from Movies podcast. Val Kilmer in Island of Dr. Moreau.
Mm-hmm.
Marlon Brando in Island of Dr. Moreau and Eric Roberts in A Talking Cat. Is that a real film?
Yeah, and I looked it up because I heard about this. He just literally, it sounds, you know, you say phoned in. I think he phoned. He's on the phone because you can hear when the cat talks. It's just this crackly Eric Roberts saying shit about the best of the best or something. I don't know, like.
Hello, yeah. Okay. Like, here's my cat talking.
I can't do it, okay.
It's just like that, it's just shit.
Sam Hurley, great friend from the Movie Reviews and Tweet Reviews podcast. Do check them out. Brando in Island Dr. Moreau, Portman in Thor 2, and Bruce Willis in pretty much anything in the past 30 years, but especially Cop Out.
Cop Out.
Combat Jones, producer and guest host on the Binge Movies podcast. 3, Wesley Snipes, Blade Trinity. You can hear it.
Yeah, this is the pattern.
2, Natalie Portman, Thor, The Dark World. And number 1, Michael Caine in Jaws, The Revenge. Kat said, Bruce Willis in Trauma Center. the one I mentioned before.
Okay.
What the fuck is this movie? My husband and I laughed the whole way through it. By the way, it's not a comedy.
Trauma Center. I see.
Mina Harker on the Facebook committee said John Forsythe in Charlie's Angels, Kiefer Sutherland in Phone Booth, and Scarlett Johansson in Her.
Oh, because she's phoned in. Oh, I see what's going on.
All voiceovers. Yeah, well done, Wayne. Well done, sir. Bob Ellis said Kevin Costner is take your pick.
Kevin Costner.
Yeah, doesn't like the K cost.
Oh, Untouchables. Come on.
That's fair. Dylan Miles, good friend of the show, does Sprickers on Facebook. Thank you, Dylan, for your hard work. Edward Norton in The Incredible Hulk.
Oh.
Marlon Brando in The Island of Dr. Moreau. And Marlon Brando in Apocalypse Now.
I've heard that. That hot take. Not so hot. It's been a while.
Rachel Webb from the Fangirling Podcast, part of the ccradio.com.au. Check out the website for they and us. Another great Aussie podcast. Said number 3, Michael Madsen, Sin City. Thank you, Rachel.
Yep.
Number 2, Clooney in Batman. Thank you, Rachel. And number 1, Brando and Dr. Morale. Morale? Morale.
Morrow.
That one.
Yeah, nice.
Thank there you, you from both of us.
Yeah, that's pretty big.
Last ones then, wrapping up. From Etienne Fillion Savé, Tom Hardy in Lock. That boy spends most of the movie on the phone.
Really?
He's in a car driving on the phone. And Blake Jarvis said Bruce Willis in Die Hard 5. There we go. Natalie Portman in Thor: The Dark World and Marlon Brando in The Score.
Good call. That was going to be on my list as well because Robert De Niro had to direct him in a few scenes. I actually rewatched that a bit as well.
Okay.
Gross.
And lastly, John Amenda from the Pint of Comics podcast, Val Kilmer in Batman Forever. He seems asleep while awake for 98% of the shitbag film. J-Law again. She's the most nominated one in X-Men Dark Phoenix. You can hear her contract running out. And lastly, totally. Natalie Portman as Queen Amidala in all the prequels. Direction by Lucas didn't help, but she's wooden AF.
Not a great role.
There we are. That's your feedback. Thank you to everyone who got back to us with their comments on the topic at hand. We're sorry if we didn't get to yours. We really, truly do appreciate all of it. Wayne, how do the listeners get back to us with that feedback at hand?
All the episodes. Google The Countdown Podcast, forget all our socials and shit, or send us an email at thecountdownpodcast@gmail.com.
We're on Twitter at TheCountdownPC. Check us out on the Facebook community. Links in the show notes. Podbean.com is where we host the show, where you can like and follow along there. And as mentioned, ccradio.com.au. That is it for episode 294. The countdown to 300 is on.
Damn right.
6 episodes to go. We're going to be ramping up celebrations as we get to 300 countdowns. Incredible that we got this far. Next week, though, waiting for episode 295. What's happening?
We're doing we're just going back to the 90s, boy. We can wear some boxy suits and do the top 10 thrillers of the 90s.
That we are. Top 10 thrillers of the 90s. You can probably guess my number one. The rest of it will be mystery.
We'll see. I can't even think about it, but 90s are my heyday. You know what I'm saying? I'll be like the music, the thing with the movies. It's all good.
A little bit different. We've got some great ones coming up for you. We have mapped it all the way out to 300. So do tune in here over the next 5-6 weeks as we head towards the end of 2020. We all get out of what has been a pretty average fucking
piece
year.
Piece of shit.
I think we will agree. That's it for today, though. My name is Paul.
My name is Wayne.
And this has been The Soundboard. Yeah! He's for every one of us.
Wait. Cut it off, cunt! Cut it off, you bag of shit!
Fuck off. We'll catch you next time.
They left already.
Well, before you bumped your fucking headphones.
You can cut that, right?
All right, are you ready, sir?
I am. I'm here to stick to you.
Carry that yawn. Energy!
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 Energy! Vindication!
I'm going to do it, motherfucker.
Let's turn that back up a bit. All right. Open. Hakana.
My.
Uh.
There's your fucking sound drop.
Yep. There's the end of the episode. Thanks for joining us. Catch you next time.